Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. Really hope you're having a great week out there. We yet again have another loaded show here on WKAR AM 870, 94.5 FM. We will, of course, be talking a lot about the Michigan State football sexual assault investigation concerning Donnie Corley, Josh King, and Demetric Vance. Vance, who was arraigned in court, 54B District Court, here in East Lansing yesterday. Corley and King arraigned today. We'll bring you details via our very own Scott Pohl, who was there at the courthouse this morning. Interesting details concerning the arraignment of both of those players. That will be around, less than 10 minutes from now, after we get to our current sports quick hit headliners. And then later on this hour, around the 1:30 mark, we will invite current sports intern Karina Garcia to the show, as she got the chance to interview, an exclusive interview, with a former MSU football player, which you'll find out who that is in just a moment, as you'll get his reaction to the news that has occurred in these last few days. Trust me, you don't want to miss that. And we will try to cover some other areas when it comes to local sports and beyond. Of course, tonight is a big night at Kircher Municipal Park. Actually, Karina and myself will be down at Kircher later on around 7 p.m. for the Diamond Classic Championship game. That'll be a nice way to break up the monotony of this whole MSU football situation. We will be there reporting from Kircher Municipal Park later on this afternoon. You don't want to miss that. We'll preview that matchup a bit later on this hour, and we will talk about a big loss for the Detroit Lions. A lot of wiggle room. I should say more wiggle room than yesterday for you all to weigh in on the Michigan State football investigation or anything that happens to be on your sports noggin. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will read it live here on our airwaves, or you can even tweet us at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin WKAR. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Now, former MSU football player Josh King, he was arraigned this morning on multiple charges in connection with a January sexual assault. King of Darien, Illinois, is charged with one count of first-degree criminal sexual conduct, one count of third-degree criminal sexual conduct, and a count of capturing an image of an unclothed person. He faces up to life in prison if convicted. Judge Richard Ball set King's bond at $25,000 cash. King's was the third arraignment of football players accused in a January 16th incident that occurred during a party at an on-campus apartment. His charges are the most serious. We will bring you more details concerning the arraignment of Josh King in just a moment, as our very own Scott Pohl was there. Donnie Corley was arraigned earlier today on one count of third-degree criminal sexual conduct. His bond was set at $10,000. He paid 10% of that to be released before King's court appearance began. Corley of Detroit faces up to 15 years in prison if convicted. And, of course, Demetric Vans, also of Detroit, he was arraigned yesterday, as we highlighted, on a charge of third-degree criminal sexual conduct. His bond was also set at $10,000, and he was released after paying 10%. All three men were ordered to have no contact with the victim. Preliminary hearings for all three are scheduled for June 22nd. Again, stick around, because in just a moment, we will have live here in Studio S, Scott Pohl, our very own Scott Pohl, who was there at District Court 54B to witness the arraignment of both Corley and King. Michigan football continues to push the limits of guaranteed payouts. U of M will play Middle Tennessee State. Get this, $1.6 million for the team's 2019 matchup at Michigan Stadium. It's one of the largest sums Michigan has paid a visiting opponent. The Wolverines paid Central Florida $1.5 million for a 2016 game and will play, pay Army $1.5 million for a 2019 game. The Wolverines announced the MTSU and Army games for the 2019 season on May 4th. The contract, obtained through a public records request, is set for the August 31st, 2019 game in Ann Arbor and was officially signed April 12th by Middle Tennessee officials. All right, the Diamond Classic Finals are set tonight at 7 p.m. at Kircher Municipal Park. Current Sports will be there reporting from that matchup, which will pit the Hope Rams and the DeWitt Panthers for the Diamond Classic Championship, one of my favorite local tournaments in high school sports. On Monday night, the Hope Rams defeated the Grand Ledge Commons 2-0. And then later on that evening, the DeWitt Panthers defeated the Fowlerville Gladiators 10-4. Both teams earning a spot in the championship game tonight. Again, at 7 p.m. at Kircher Municipal Park. Detroit Lions left tackle Taylor Decker underwent shoulder surgery on Monday for an injury he suffered last week, and he will miss at least the rest of the team's offseason program. Lions head coach Jim Caldwell declined to put a timetable on Decker's return, but he said he does not believe the injury will cost Decker the entire 2017 campaign. Caldwell declined to say how Decker suffered the injury, but he expressed confidence that the Lions will be able to withstand their left tackle's absence. Decker, the 16th pick of last year's draft, is out of Ohio State, played every offensive snap as a rookie, and performed well against some of the NFL's best pass rushers. We will have more on that story later on this hour. Detroit Red Wings forward Luke Glendening had ankle surgery. He is out 3 to 4 months, but will still be exposed to the Vegas Golden Knights expansion draft, barring a trade package. The Wings announced yesterday that Glendening underwent successful surgery to repair a tendon damage to his left ankle. He was injured in the March 27th game at Carolina and missed the last seven games of the year. Originally, it was thought that he wouldn't need surgery for what was diagnosed as a fractured ankle and partially torn tendons. Again, estimated recovery is 3 to 4 months. The Wings open training camp in September, actually September 15th to be exact. Glendening is the second Wings forward whose recovery threatens his availability come autumn, as Thomas Tatar underwent shoulder surgery in mid-April. The Detroit Tigers have a four-game win streak. Well, that was snapped last night with a 5-3 loss to the LA Angels at Comerica Park. It was a frustrating game for more than a few Tigers, including lefty starting pitcher Daniel Norris, lefty reliever Blaine Hardy, who was sent back to AAA Toledo after the game, designated hitter Victor Martinez, Alex Presley, he started in center after the Tigers sent Jacoby Jones back to Toledo earlier in the day to make room for Ian Kinsler. Presley and JD both struggled in the outfield, which led to a couple of runs for the Angels. The Tigers outhit the Angels 10-6, but didn't score like they did in the three-game sweep of the Chicago White Sox over the weekend. The Tigers fell back under 500 at 28-29 and are now 6-21 when they score four runs or less. The Tigers will play against the Angels tonight at 7:10 p.m. All right. Detroit City Council approved agreements yesterday, including a nearly $20 million brownfield tax incentive and exemptions tied to the Detroit Pistons practice facility downtown, despite concerns raised by residents and two council members. The approvals came more than half a year after negotiations between the city and the Pistons began. The council voted 7-2 on a development agreement, memorandum of understanding, and a brownfield redevelopment plan related to the practice facility and corporate offices. So, again, they have approved that agreement, which includes a nearly $20 million tax incentive for a Detroit Pistons practice facility. And last but certainly not least, Game 3 of the NBA Finals will take place tonight on ABC at Quicken Loans Arena out in Ohio. The Cleveland Cavaliers will look to get their first win of the series at home against the Golden State Warriors. Sunday, the Warriors took a commanding 2-0 series lead, blowing out the Cavs behind another stellar performance by former MVP Kevin Durant. Yeah, he has 71 points in the two home games so far that have taken place in the series. And get this, more than his predecessor Harrison Barnes scored in all of last year's series. That's a pretty crazy stat, right? The Cavs, despite being down in a series for the first time this year, are in well-traveled territory. Last year, they famously rebounded, I should say, from being down 2-0 and then 3-1 before winning in 7 games. But yes, this is an entirely different Golden State Warriors team, right? Tip off, 9 p.m. Eastern time tonight. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Phone lines are open. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
I feel it's very unfortunate that as women, sometimes we're not safe, and for it to take 6 months to have them go to court and face their consequences is embarrassing, I guess, to the city of East Lansing and Michigan State.
That was the reaction from one female student I spoke with on the Michigan State University campus regarding three Spartan football players accused of sexual assault. Sophomore student Israel tells me how this feeling of danger was also shared by one of his female friends.
Yeah, one of my friends really has a hard time, like, walking home, and she lives, like, 30 minutes away. So she usually tells me to, like, text her in 30 minutes to see if she's okay, or, like, yesterday she even called me at, like, while she was walking home because she did feel unsafe.
Another student, Haley, was upfront about her opinions on the consequences the players are facing.
I mean, I think they're getting what they deserve right now, and I don't think that they should be granted anything less than what they're getting.
Outside of the Broad Art Museum, one student offered her perspective on how the community can use this event moving forward.
I think it brings attention to maybe something that could improve the cultural climate, especially with athletes and just men in general, how they respond towards women.
And that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. That was reaction, courtesy of our very own Karell Vega. Reaction from students around campus and other personnel. Reaction concerning, of course, the big news around the area concerning three Michigan State, now former football players, who have been officially charged with sexual assault. Demetric Vance, who was arraigned yesterday, Donnie Corley, and Josh King. Corley and King both arraigned today. And before we dive into just some banter and dialogue concerning what this means for Mark D'Antonio's football program moving forward, what this means for the campus of Michigan State when it pertains to overall safety, especially the female demographic here on campus. Before we dive into all of that chatter, we have right now live in Studio West, Scott Pohl, who was in District Court 54B today to witness the arraignments of Corley and King. On Tuesday, former MSU football player Demetric Vance was arraigned on a third-degree criminal sexual conduct charge related to a January incident at a campus party. Today, two other players implicated in the same alleged assault faced arraignment. WKAR Scott Pohl, again, was in district court. Judge Richard Ball's courtroom for the arraignments of Donnie Corley Jr. and Joshua King, and he now joins me. First off, Scott, how are you doing, man? You've been very busy.
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for having me on. We have to stop meeting like this.
We have to, for sure, right? Maybe in the future we can have you on to talk
about sports.
Yeah, talk some fun things right. Going on in the world of sports, right?
Right.
Well, let's get to the news of this morning. Donnie Corley Jr. was before the judge first, right? What transpired there, Scott?
Well, I didn't cover Demetric Vance's proceedings yesterday, but my sense is that Corley's were very similar to what happened with Demetric Vance the day before.
Yeah, that was our very own Katie Cook, who was there.
To the afternoon one yesterday. So Corley faces a charge of third-degree criminal sexual conduct. That carries the possibility of 15 years in prison. Much like the Vance case, the prosecution sought a bond of $50,000. Corley's defense attorney, John Shea, asked for a reduction to $10,000 with a 10% provision, and that was granted by the judge, and so Corley paid his bail and was freed on bond.
Much of like what happened yesterday with Demetric Vance,
yes.
Right? He paid his 10% and was released. Josh King, a different story. Joshua King was also arraigned, and he faces more serious charges, Scott.
That's right. First of all, along with a third-degree criminal sexual conduct charge, Joshua King faces a first-degree criminal sexual conduct charge, and if he's convicted of that, he could go to prison for life. And the other charge that he's facing has to do with possessing and distributing an image of an unclothed person. And that carries a penalty of up to 5 years in prison if he were to be convicted on that charge. Again, the prosecution asked for a $50,000 bond, and the defense asked for a reduction, sort of similar pattern here, until that point. Because what Judge Ball did was reduce the bail to $25,000, but the judge denied a defense request for a 10% provision like was granted to Vance and Corley, and that means that King would have to pay all $25,000 to be released on bail. His attorney, Shannon Smith, argued that King has so far obeyed all the provisions of a personal protection order, and that even though he lives in the Chicago area, he isn't a flight risk. As evidence of not being a flight risk, she pointed out that he and his mother and others who were there to support him today had left the Chicago area at 3:30 in the morning to get to court. Mm-hmm. As evidence that he's taking these charges seriously and will do what he needs to do to be in court.
So he's been in Chicago.
Yes.
Before today.
Yes.
Right?
I can't tell you for what length of time,
right.
And she also talked about the family financial situation, assuming that the point was to make it clear that he wasn't going to be able to post a $25,000 bond. And Judge Ball expressed concern that living out of state might make it difficult to find King if he ever did fail to appear in court. And so he denied the 10% provision. And King's mother was visibly upset when her son was taken into custody. But he was taken into custody because he was unable to post the bond.
So when Judge Ball denied the reduction,
mm-hmm.
What occurred with his mother?
Well, she tried to approach him. The defense attorney, Shannon Smith, approached her and just told her to stop several times. Using the word commotion would be an exaggeration. She wasn't yelling or anything like that, but okay. She was visibly upset. And once her son was had left the room on his way to the holding cell or wherever they go at that point, she left the courtroom and needed to be consoled. Shannon Smith spent some time consoling her before she left. They both left. And neither of the attorneys for Corley or for King made any public statements today after these proceedings.
Okay, so no statements from any lawyers
here in the
situation as well.
Right.
But you did see the image of what King getting put behind, you know, handcuffs, his hands behind his back. Did you see that at all?
He was not handcuffed.
He was not handcuffed.
At least not at the time I saw him. But
okay. There
was an officer of the court who placed a hand on his arm to lead him towards the door where they go. He was not handcuffed, though. Not that I saw.
Any other family members that you can confirm for King or Corley in the courtroom?
They both had support, but without being introduced to them, who was family, who was friends, would be difficult to ascertain other than King's mother.
Of course. Scott, what's next for these young men?
Well, pretty simply, Judge Ball has scheduled what's called a pre-exam probable cause conference. This is different from the preliminary exam.
Okay, I've never heard of this before. Okay.
I'm not an attorney, and I can't explain the difference, okay?
Right.
But the pre-exam probable cause conferences will be held next week on June 15th. I believe the same for all three cases, the same scheduling. And then preliminary exams, to whatever extent that's different, are scheduled for June 22nd, a week later.
All right. Our very own Scott Pohl. Scott, I imagine you're putting together something for All Things Considered later this afternoon, right?
That's right.
Okay. Scott, great reporting. Appreciate your time this afternoon, my man.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Al.
Again, folks, we want to get your reaction to this story, to this news, this latest news concerning the arraignment of Donnie Corley and Josh King. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, Donnie Corley faces a charge of third-degree criminal sexual assault, well, criminal sexual conduct, I should say, which carries the possibility of 15 years in prison. And the prosecution sought a bond of $50,000, according to defense attorney John Shea. And he asked for a reduction of $10,000 with a 10% provision, which was granted. King, on the other hand, again, prosecution asked for $50,000 bond. The defense asked for a reduction. Judge Ball reduced that to $25,000. The judge denied a defense request for a 10% provision like what was granted to Vance and Corley. His reasoning, he expressed concern, Judge Ball did, that living out of state might make it difficult to find King if he ever failed to appear, as our very own Scott Pohl just highlighted. Isaac Constance, our engineer behind the glass, Isaac, has been following this story quite closely. Isaac and I, we worked about, 12 straight hours yesterday following this story and getting things up via WKAR.org. First off, how are you, my man? Did you get some rest last night?
I did. Well, actually, afterwards, I went over to the Pruden Place Center in Lansing, actually where you used to live, if I'm not mistaken.
My old stomping ground,
yeah.
Yes.
And they've got a cool gym in there, which has actually been converted, just a quick digression, into Futsal Center, which, of course, is a story we'll bring to you soon enough, before you know it, in fact. And I went down there, checked out the dimensions, the new surface they've got. Really cool. So for me, actually elongated it, stretched it to 13 hours, because I'm of the mindset that, you know, if you have a bad or a long day, just stretch it out, make it a memory so that tomorrow's better. So that's what I did yesterday.
Look at you, Mr. Positive. That's good. You were a ray of sunshine when you left this office den yesterday, dude. Love it.
Thank you. That's quite the compliment. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, Isaac, you just heard our very own Scott Pohl in here in Studio West giving us a rundown of what took place early this morning concerning the arraignments of Donnie Corley and Josh King. And I must say, when it comes to Donnie Corley and Demetric Vance, not surprised what took place in their respective arraignments. You know, the $10,000 bond, paying 10% of that so that they won't have to go to jail, right, and take it into custody right then and there. But for Josh King, again, he is the individual facing the more serious charges in this whole fiasco. I mean, if you look at the details, which again, by now, most, if not all of Spartan Nation, if you've been following this story, you know what the details of this case are. You know what's being alleged by the victim here. Very serious stuff. King seemed to be allegedly the catalyst here in this whole situation. So not surprised that he's facing the more serious charges, and not surprised that his bond was higher in comparison to that of both Vance and Corley. I was a big shock, however, that Judge Ball decided to not offer the provision of paying 10% of the $25,000 bond reduction from $50,000, noting that, yes, seeing as though Joshua King does live out of state, it might make it difficult if he ever failed to appear. Maybe, you know, maybe a flight risk of some sorts. What's your reaction to that, Isaac?
I wouldn't say I was surprised, just because for me it's been clear from what's been portrayed, what's been alleged, that King seemed to be the ringleader in this situation. And it was clear that if you just look at the maximum sentences, you've got two people right here facing 15 years and then a mandatory sexual offender registration. On the other side, you've got life in prison. I mean, this is not any sort of minor, trivial crime we're facing on either side, but life in prison, this lets you know, even if you haven't read the details, the severity of this. So it didn't surprise me. At the same time, that reasoning that you mentioned surprised me as well. All of these players seem to be pretty well kept up with. And at the same time, this case has been brewing for so long, it seems to me that if there was a risk of that, they would have bailed ship already and tried to get away before anything could be really charged against them.
Again, if you would like to weigh in on this story, you can do so by picking up that phone and dialing 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. We're taking your comments throughout this entire hour, comments and calls. And I want to, before we hit our first break here and bring along our intern and reporter, Karina Garcia, who got the chance to chat with a pretty familiar name in recent MSU football history, who Karina pulled some strings and lo and behold, got an exclusive interview with this player and got his reaction to what has transpired in these last few days. Before we do that, I do want to talk about this story from the perspective of Michigan State football. As we rolled in yesterday to start the show, Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football team, along with Mark Hollis, Michigan State University athletic director, they both approached the podium in the north end zone of Spartan Stadium at the media center to talk about what has transpired with these now three former MSU football players in Corley, King, and Vance. And you had Mark Hollis approach the podium first, and he got very emotional, especially during the part when he talked about Michigan State being his home. Mark, reminiscing a bit, saying that I attended Michigan State University. I met my wife here who also attended Michigan State University. I have children who go to Michigan State University. I have a son that will be enrolling this fall here at Michigan State University. This is home for me. And I want to make sure, and I want to feel like my home is safe. And then immediately after Hollis noted that, he began to get emotional and teared up a bit. Very genuine and very honest. And then moments after that, you had Mark D'Antonio address the podium and make the formal announcement. He did so prior to that in a press release to the media members and to the public, but making the announcement during that time that Josh King, Donnie Corley, and Demetric Vance were no longer a part of the Michigan State football program. And I must say, there were a few people that were surprised that these three players were no longer a part of the program, that Mark D'Antonio came out and made the statement. More so surprised because these three individuals, again, are innocent until proven guilty in the court of law, right? They're still just allegedly sexual assault offenders. And I found it interesting because D'Antonio elaborated on why he decided to make this decision and kick these three players off the team, and it was from a moral standpoint. Moral character being the number one component as to why Mark D'Antonio decided to make this move. And I totally agree with him. I totally agree with him because he's sending the message now to the rest of his team, to the rest of his players, that sexual assault in any way, shape, or form, even if you just put yourself in that position, you can't do that. It is not going to be tolerated, and we take this very seriously. And it's so interesting on so many layers because if you evaluate this whole situation in January, what is being alleged took place on January 16th, I believe, what, a week or two prior, Mark D'Antonio held a program to educate his players on sexual assault on campus. And then what happens? Not only do you have this case concerning King, Corley, and Vance, but a little after that, you had Mr. Austin Robertson, who was officially charged with sexual assault due to an incident later on, a few weeks after that. And we, of course, highlighted that a few weeks ago. This is clearly a problem that is not just a Michigan State University problem. Just read the news. Crack open that laptop, open up that smartphone or iPad, whatever you have, and just do some casual reading. In the last few months, the last few weeks even, in the world of sports, we are seeing far too often young men who play collegiate sports being accused of sexual assault here in America. And it is a glaring problem. Heck, not even for just athletes, right? Just today's millennial generation, we're seeing it left and right. And trying to figure out how to solve this problem now becomes the next step for campuses across this great nation. Trying to figure this thing out, right? Trying to figure out how this generation thinks is very tough. And it's a combination of factors, because if you take a pot and you throw in that pot, how today's society views sex, the over-sexualized world we live in. I mean, I can't go on social media or watch a movie or watch a music video without seeing it in some way, shape, or form. You have that mixed in with a lot of our young men today not being properly educated and shown how to treat our beautiful women here in this nation and the world. They're not educated, or they don't have that example growing up as to how to treat a member of the opposite sex. But for an athlete's perspective, you throw in those two things, and then you throw on top of that the word entitlement, and you have a bad recipe. It is a glaring problem. And I know Mark D'Antonio, as he noted yesterday during his press conference to address this issue, he's had some sleepless nights trying to figure it out. There were two other moments of that pressure that really stood out. When Mark D'Antonio was asked by my good friend in the industry, Fred Heumann, sports director at Channel 6, whether or not he felt betrayed by King, Corley, and Vance. And he said, no, I'm angry because the education was there. And I want to stop there and say that it isn't enough. Whatever is taking place across college campuses in this nation in terms of trying to educate young men on sexual assault is not enough. And you know what? It's got to happen earlier. It's got to happen earlier. College is far too late to try and mentor these young men on how to act if they don't already know how to, which they should, right? On how to act when it comes to a member of the opposite sex. You got to start teaching these kids elementary school. It's a problem that is systematic in many ways. I mean, I could go on and on and on. But Mark D'Antonio and the Michigan State football program and athletic programs across this nation have to find a way to try and combat this because it is a glaring in-your-face issue. Mark D'Antonio also talked about how he has daughters and how, you know, he thinks of them when discussing a situation like this. And also, the other part of that person that really stood out as well is when Mark D'Antonio was asked whether or not at any point throughout this investigation dating back to February 9th, whether or not there was any point where he felt like throwing in the towel and giving up. Stuck by his guns and said no. This is why he was hired, right? To not only steer the ship when things are going great. Not too long ago, this team won a Big Ten championship, won a Rose Bowl, went to the college football playoff, for goodness sake. Then went 3-9, right? And now these instances of sexual assault. He wasn't just hired here. A coach isn't just hired to get a team to the mountaintop in the X's and O's and steer the ship when things are great, but also to steer the ship when the waves are running against that boat, when things aren't great. He's got a tall task, folks. And right now, all Coach D'Antonio can do is, one, find out a way to further educate his players on this very issue. But number two, try and handle business on the football field and win games, which is right now the last thing on everyone's mind. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite Karina Garcia live here in Studio S, current sports intern and reporter. She has a chat getting reaction from a former MSU football player on what has transpired in the recent days. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We have some news to push through. This is being reported, I'm reading from, I should say, from the Detroit Free Press, Chris Solari. I'll just read the first two graphs of this story because this is particularly intriguing, right? Mark D'Antonio says, it goes on to read, quote, Mark D'Antonio would not address the dismissal of defensive lineman Austin Robertson on Tuesday, other than calling him, quote, a risk, end quote, as the former player faces sexual assault charges. Later that afternoon, a University Board of Trustees member confirmed in a radio interview that Robertson was the previously unnamed player who reported an alleged January sexual assault to the Michigan State head coach, Mark D'Antonio. The article goes on to read, quote, it adds a complex wrinkle to two separate allegations of rape, one in April involving Robertson and the other involving Josh King, Donnie Corley, and, of course, Demetric Vance. That interview took place on WBBL 107.3 FM. Mitch Lyons, a university Board of Trustees member here at Michigan State, confirmed that Robertson was the player who reported the January incident to D'Antonio. So you have a player in Austin Robertson who is facing his own criminal sexual conduct charge in April, allegedly on April 8th in Meridian Township. You have Robertson as the player who went to Mark D'Antonio and said, "Coach D, something's wrong here. Something took place back in January with these three players." Wow. That's stunning to me, Isaac. That is very stunning stuff.
Yeah, well, wrinkle in the story, it really complicates everything that we suspected or knew or that was alleged about each of these individuals. Because, boy, I mean, Austin Robertson, the thing is with the time frame, it's so important here. It's that he reported the January incident to D'Antonio well before his own sexual assault was alleged, well before the April 8th incident or anything like that. So it really, like you said, adds a wrinkle. I'm not sure what to make of it just yet. I'll have to listen to the full interview and see what the context was. But at the same time, no, I'm confused right now. Just flat out confused.
Yeah, well, I think we certainly need to let that information digest a bit before we start rambling, right? In the meantime, let's get to our interview for today's Current Sports. Our very own Karina Garcia, Current Sports intern and reporter, got the chance to chat with a man who is not far removed from the Michigan State football program. He actually played for Michigan State from 2010 to 2013 and then decided to chuck up the deuces to MSU football and try his hand at playing professional football in the National Football League, leaving early, I do believe. Right, Karina? So, his name is Isaiah Lewis, actually. Isaiah Lewis from Indianapolis, Indiana. He's a safety, went to Ben Davis High School. Isaiah Lewis took some time to call into Studio S yesterday afternoon and chat with our very own Karina Garcia about many, many different topics, also concerning his career and where it stands now and whether or not he is trying to still chase the dream of landing a contract in professional football, either over in the CFL or the NFL. But Karina got the chance to chat with Isaiah first concerning what has transpired in recent days concerning the MSU sexual assault investigations for Donnie Corley, Josh King, and Demetric Vance. And here is how that conversation went.
It's an unfortunate situation. I'm praying for those kids. I wish they didn't have to go through that type of thing. But things happen. I don't know that much about it, but, you know, it's just unfortunate.
Did you have a relationship with those players? Have you seen them in the facilities? Have you talked to them? Anything like that?
I've seen them around, but, I wasn't as close to them as I was with former players, other players. But, I've definitely seen them around, but, I didn't really know them that close.
So what was the culture like when you played?
When I was there, we had, it was mostly like a family. I would always call it my family from home because I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. We were really close and, everybody, we had really, our team chemistry was real good. And I feel like that was a factor in, us winning those three bowl games and having those incredible seasons throughout my 4 years.
So what, did you have any type of relationship with those players? I know you say you weren't as close with them and you talked about being close with your teammates, but did you have any type of relationship with these three players?
With the players currently, or are you mentioning those three players?
The four players.
Those guys, I'll come in and see them every now and then. I wasn't really, really close with them, but I would, you come in and I would see them all the time just because I would come to the facility all the time and come work out and stuff. So I would see them, but I wasn't really close with those guys.
So did you have any type of interactions with Josh King, Demetric Vance, or Donnie Corley?
Not really.
So Coach D'Antonio obviously has a lot on his hands right now. So when you were playing, was there any sexual education implementation for his players at that time?
You say education?
Yes, any sexual education that was implemented for his players and the team?
Yeah, we always had, it was always usually during the summer, like during camp or whatever, we'll have a guy come in and talk about all the sexual stuff and all. He'll come and explain it to us. So that was like a mandatory thing that we'd always have like around our camp period.
Do you know if that is still something that Coach D implements in this current program?
Yeah, I mean, I know Coach D, so, you know, not much changes around that program. You know, they do things on time, on schedule. If they had that back when I was playing, I'm for sure they had it. They have it now currently. And they've had it back in the past before I even came there. So, you know, that's a big thing for them. And they, you know, they never wanted anything like this to happen. So, you know, that's why they implement those type of things. That's why they put that into the program. And that's why it's mandatory. So, yeah, he definitely has it now.
So, obviously, this is a huge common problem around the country, not only with MSU football, but what do you think changed the culture? Like, what is the problem?
I honestly cannot say what the problem is. I'm not sitting there in the locker room with the team. You know, I'm not obviously not on the team anymore. So, somebody could give you more information that is currently in the locker room now. Cause I mean, I can't say, you know, I'm not going to speak on something that I don't really know about. So I'm not going to give you any trash or just say anything. So, I just don't know about that situation.
Do you think that it's an issue of entitlement with these young players?
I don't necessarily think that. I just think their team was really young back, I mean, last year. They had a really young team, and, you know, with that becomes, you know, just naturally comes immaturity. Like, just naturally comes that, you know, you have a lot of 18-year-old guys, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds. I mean, guys have to eventually, you know, they have to grow up. And then, you know, it takes time for that process to happen. You know, as you get older and mature and, you know, you're around the system a little bit longer, you know, you finally mature. So it just, I mean, I don't feel like it's a sense of entitlement. I feel like it's just immaturity at a certain point. But, you know, those things get better. You know, when you have leaders on the team that – can guide the players to the right direction, you know, that helps a lot. And so I would also say that I feel like there was a lack of leadership in the locker room throughout this last year.
Why do you think that there was a lack of leadership this year?
I wasn't in the locker room. I can't sit here and tell you that, like, why the exact reason why there was a lack of leadership. But I just know that they can get that together. I feel like that's something that they're strongly working on, and that's something that they can definitely get better. You know, if when I was back playing, we had Max Buller, was a really strong leader on our team. And if they can get a guy like that, which I feel like they can, you know, it's hard to replace a guy like Max, but you can get another guy to step up and be that vocal leader. And tell guys, like, this is what we're going to do, and this is our goal, and this is what you're not going to do because this is going to interfere with our goal. If you get a guy like that, then there will be no stopping MSU because, you know, we have the talent. We have the talent. Everybody knows we have the talent. So we just need the leadership part, and that's going to get everybody together.
Do you think that Michigan State and the university handled this situation correctly?
Excuse me, say it again.
Do you think that MSU and the university handled this situation correctly?
I mean, you can only handle it only a few different ways. And, man, I'm not the judge of how they should have handled it. But, I mean, however they handled it, I mean, if they feel like that was the best way, I mean, that's all you can do. I feel like Michigan State would have you know, did all they could do to, you know, help the players. I don't feel like they were trying to, like, put the players out there as an example to look bad. And I believe MSU wouldn't do that to them. So whatever the consequence is, you know, if you actually did what they said you did, I mean, you at the end of the day, you got to be real with yourself and you got to face the facts and face the consequences. So, I mean, I have nothing against those guys, and I think they're good kids, you know. I think they're really good kids. You know, I never heard nothing bad about any of those guys before the situation. But, I mean, if you really did it, and, you know, you at the end of the day, be real with yourself. If you didn't do it, you know what you did. So that's all I got to say about that.
Do you think that Coach D'Antonio has handled this the right way? Because we haven't heard as much from him. So do you think that there's a reason for that?
I mean, I just think Coach D was just trying to protect his, you know, protect his players. Coach D, he really cares, genuinely cares about his players. So he don't want to put him in harm's way because, you know, people are going to talk. If they start, you know, hearing about anything, they're going to start talking, and a lot of people are trying to make him look bad. And so he knows the guys are still young. And nobody wants to deal with that kind of stuff. So, Cody, he wants to protect them because he loves those guys. It's like when we were there, he loved us. And so he's not going to put you in harm's way. He'll treat you like you're his own son. So, I mean, anybody that has kids, I mean, they know they're not going to put their children in harm's way. And that's just what he's doing, man. He's not trying to be secretive about anything. He's not out here trying to hide anything. He's just trying to be protective of his guys.
Do you think that MSU football will get back on track eventually, and how do you think they will do so?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, we've had, before I came to Michigan State, even my 2012, my junior year, I mean, we've had down years. We've had bad seasons. So, those seasons like that, you kind of need stuff like that to rebuild. And that's your learning process. And that just sets you up to be great. Sometimes you got to take a step back to take two steps forward. So, you know, there's no doubt that they're going to recover from this last season and all these problems. And because MSU always comes back, you know. We're a team that always keeps fighting. So, I have no doubt about that.
All right, again, that was Isaiah Lewis, Michigan State football player from the years 2010 to 2013. Played in the 2014 Rose Bowl. Again, that's still considered the 2013 season. His sophomore year, they won an Outback Bowl. Went to an Outback Bowl. Junior year, they played in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. I love me some B-dubs. And then senior year, of course, they were the Big Ten champions, which that game took place out in Indy, his hometown. And they, of course, won the Rose Bowl, which we covered, which was such a fun event to cover the first time since MSU played in the Rose Bowl since 1988. Right now we have Karina live here in Studio West for a very brief postscript. Karina, first off, how did you get in touch with Isaiah?
I actually contacted a bunch of his past teammates who were on the team when he was playing, and just basically asked, like, who do you think would be willing to talk to me about this and who was going to give me genuine answers? So I ended up getting his number and asking him if he was comfortable talking about this.
And Karina, before you joined us here at WKAR, you were actually an athletic trainer. Well, you worked with the athletic trainers at Michigan State and worked very closely with the MSU football team. I have to ask you, did you notice anything about the culture of the locker room? Again, when you're working with them just on, you know, you're probably taping them up and your interaction is very business-like. But did you notice anything during your time with the team?
Yeah, my major was, it used to be athletic training. I was mostly in the training room. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they would joke with each other, you know, obviously just get their treatment. But I never stepped foot or even saw the locker room. So I don't know what happens in the locker room.
Right.
I mean, from what they say, I mean, it's all jokes, you know, until it's business on the field.
They're just normal kids then,
yeah,
from what you saw.
They're normal kids.
Right.
I never saw anything that would be of concern.
Okay, I wanted to ask that. And also, again, we will be re-releasing part two of that conversation later on this week. What else can we expect from that conversation once we put it out there?
So the other questions that I had asked Isaiah was about his career, what he's doing now, away from MSU football, where he was that big star. and just his tough journey he's had trying to play football. So, and him not getting a degree, you know, a lot of young players leave early now in hopes of making it in the NFL, but sometimes that doesn't go as they planned. So he talks about all that. And his brother slash teammate, who he lost earlier in this year, Mylon Hicks. So he gets really emotional about that as well.
Yeah, I've heard that snippet of the interview, and that is a very emotional part of that chat. We will roll that in later on this week. Karina, great work. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it, our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's current sports by briefly reminding you all about tonight's Diamond Classic at Kircher Municipal Park, the championship game between two baseball powerhouses. That and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished up a chat with Current Sports intern and reporter Karina Garcia reporting on actually getting a chat with Isaiah Lewis, former Michigan State football player, as he weighed in on his reaction to the Michigan State sexual assault charges. We have just under 2 minutes left here. I just want to remind you all that tonight at Kircher Municipal Park, for all of those that want to dive into a positive local sporting story and kind of deviate from this whole MSU football stuff, Isaac, tonight, the championship game between the Holt Rams. Had to make sure I got caught up reading here. The Holt Rams and the DeWitt Panthers will take place. Of course, I'm curious to see if Hakenin will be on the mound for Holt. He has been great. He's a future MSU baseball player. So we'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place, folks. We'll also recap Game 3 of the NBA Finals, that and so much more. As always, take care and be easy, people.